He's all pazzo, he's all pazzo. E voglio essere chi voglio, uscite fuori da casa mia. He's all pazzo, he's all pazzo. C'ho il popolo che mi aspetta, e scusate vado di fretta. Non mi date sempre ragione, io lo so che sono un errore. E la vita voglio vivere almeno un giorno da più. E lo Stato questa volta non mi deve condannare, perché sono pazzo.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another edition of the Far From Vesuvius Maradona Era Chronicles. Today we will be looking at season 1987-88, and we are entering this season as champions of Italy, Campioni d'Italia. I am, as always, with my man Frank Sidekick. Frank, what's going on, my friend?
Well, I've just been hanging out with t-shirts in the glorious sunshine, and I was looking at the 16-17 Napoli away shirt that I've got, you know, the white one with the blue stripe.
Yeah, that's your avatar on Skype, as a matter of fact. Every time I see you, I see that.
It's a good one. Although we spent a lot of this season away playing in red, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And, you know, it's funny because I saw you mention something on Twitter about the red and white kits, and I had put in my notes before that Napoli in red and white. It's not
like
too
it.
Often that you see. Yeah, oh, yeah. I think the last time I might have seen that was when we had the Coppa kits before that season, yeah, with our last year with Higuain. Yeah. And before that with Lavezzi. The Lavezzi Napoli of 08-09-ish. But glory days is right. But someone actually mentioned that this kit, you know, best looking away kit. Remember on Twitter, and I saw you write, writing in about it. And this actually became more of a home kit for us because it was so popular.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was a superstitious thing in the end. Didn't quite come off. But no, I'm really good. I'm really looking forward to this because, I mean, last one was the Scudetto show. A lot of pressure on for that one, Rafa.
Yeah,
except for
there was.
To get it right. I was happy with it. It was great to talk to you about that.
And so a lot of emotion, my friend. A lot of emotion.
And that's good. It's good to have emotion. But this one, I sort of took the pressure off myself and really drank in a totally fascinating, controversial season with some of the best Napoli goals that are out there. So yeah, I'm good, man. I'm really good.
Well, that's good. And I would like to really quickly introduce a young helper that's here with me today. He actually helped me research the this season for a little bit, and he is very familiar with the name Diego Armando Maradona because I bring him up all the time. But it wasn't until we started doing these episodes that he starts listening to the podcast. And now he's actually up to reading the Maradona biography, probably against my better judgment. But joining me today for just a little while is my 9-year-old son, Rocco. Rocco, you want to say something to the people?
Hey, guys. What's up? How's it going?
Ah, there he is.
Rocco
wanted to see how the magic happens, so he's here with me. And Rocco, real quick before we start, because we've got a lot to talk about, what's your favorite Diego Maradona moment?
Probably when he won the Scudetto.
Yeah, when he won the Scudetto. Yeah, that's a big deal. That's a big deal
excellent,
for us.
Excellent choice, Rocco. He's good, this kid.
Indeed. He knows his thing, and he's reading up on the biography, and he's asking me questions, so we'll have him a Maradona aficionado as soon as possible. So let's go ahead, Frank. So here we are once again into the next season as champions of Italy, Coppa Italia winners. I should mention that June 13th is the day Napoli win the Coppa Italia, and that starts the off season for the team. But Maradona, only 2 weeks later, will be in the Copa America in 1987 in Argentina, which is won by Uruguay. Maradona scores 3 goals in that competition, but misses the semifinals due to illness. They would lose that match, and Uruguay would go on to win the Copa America. Argentina would finish fourth. So not much of a rest for Diego until maybe late June there.
Yeah, and this is something that's going to come up. I mean, in his book, he says he's played about 200 consecutive games since signing for Napoli, which isn't quite true, but it's pretty much true, isn't it? Incredible run of games. Amazing he can even stand up.
Right. And, you know, back then, you know, the exaggeration was there, but it was a lot of games. It might as well have been 200. And, you know, the way they play, and again, we bring it up all the time, the surfaces they played on, you know, it's not easy to play, especially in a league that's widely, you know, regarded as the best league in the world in Serie A at the time, late 80s, early 90s. You can't really doubt, you know, bet against that. That's an honest opinion, you know.
And also the tactics as well. I mean, we're talking about heavy metal football last time round, and we'll get onto it a bit in a bit more detail. We start to play in a slightly different way this season, but the intensity of, you know, the amount of pressing the forwards are expected to do. The fact that Maradona comes deep all the time. I mean, if you had, these stats don't exist, but it'd be so interesting to see the kind of meters covered that Maradona would do on average. So he's not just Gary Lineker hanging in the penalty area, tapping it in, is it? He's everywhere on the pitch, isn't he?
Everywhere. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So Maradona will get a well-deserved break after the Copa America, but who's not on break is Ottavio Bianchi and the new sporting director of Napoli. You might know his name, Luciano Moggi. Boy, doesn't that name ring a bell, huh?
Well, it's a controversial season, and how appropriate that we have such a controversial person mentioned early on.
Exactly. Controversy follows this guy everywhere he goes, and it doesn't surprise me after doing a bunch of digging here that you know, this will end in a controversial way as well. Anyway, Napoli will secure a couple of pretty important names here, and we'll get started with we'll go from down to up. Paolo Miano will come in from Udinese at 26 years old. Not much of a factor in the season, but he does play into some conversation here in a minute. But Giovanni Francini would also come over from Torino at 23 years old. He finishes second in Serie A in 84-85 with Torino and went on to three consecutive Coppa Italia finals. But Francini would become a pretty big staple in the team as well for the next few years to come. But everybody's here to hear about the man who completes Magica, Antonio de Oliveira Filho, a.k.a. Careca. Frank, can we say enough about this guy and his impact on this team?
I mean, we're going to. I mean, I just love this. I love him so much. And I've been irritating people on Twitter about him all week. One of the greatest sort of number nines, even though he wore the number seven shirt. Yeah, I mean, wonderful. And as you said, that combination of strikers for us was just so much fun to watch over the course of this week preparing it. What a fantastic signing. World class. Probably the first world class player that we signed in this period since Maradona, I would say. What do you reckon, Rafa?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that because, you know, with Maradona and the team he assembled, we had a Scudetto Coppa Italia winning team. But with Careca, we're going to go on to do quite a bit more, you know. And I think Careca was the piece of the puzzle that made us absolutely complete. Like, we talked about formulating a team little by little, season by season with Maradona. But when Careca comes in, it's like, that's it. And even in this season, which, you know, we'll dive into, you're going to see that this could perhaps have been the best Napoli team of all the Napoli teams.
Great show.
Careca comes over from Sao Paulo for 4 million lira. And at 26 years old, he actually played with a little-known Brazilian team called Guarani. In 1987, they win the Brasileiro there. He plays 5 seasons. He's got 77 appearances and 46 goals. That's a good goal-to-game ratio there. He would get transferred to Sao Paulo in 1986. He'd win the Brasileiro there, and that's sandwiched in between an 85 and 87 Paulista state championship in Brazil. For those who don't know, there's 10 or 12 states in Brazil, and so many teams that this is the oldest tournament or competition in Brazilian football. The Brasileiro didn't really start until mid 50s or 60s, and this is a big deal for people in the region. You know, it's about pride. So they won 2 of those, 5 seasons there, 67 appearances, 54 goals. So less matches, more goals for Sao Paulo. That's a total of 144 appearances, 100 goals in Brazil. So that's what we're getting. We're getting that Careca with Maradona and Giordano that is taking care of business. Frank, it's an exciting time. The transfers out would be Volpecino and Chino Muro. They are going to leave after season. They go to Verona and Lazio, respectively. Caranante and Celestini will leave and go to Ascoli. Caffarelli will leave to Udinese. And Domenico Penzo to Trento in Serie C. So there is that. Anything else you want to mention about our transfer window?
We're going to talk about Francini, I think, a fair bit. He's my pick for all-time left back.
There you go.
I mean, he's a brilliant player, and he's a very modern player, really attack-focused fullback. And he was quick, he was tactically smart, fantastic crosser of the ball, and also great at cutting into the penalty box and scoring. I mean, a fantastic signing. I mean, Careca is one of the best players in the world. He finished as runner-up for the Golden Boot for the 1986 World Cup. Okay, he was playing in Brazil, but he wasn't exactly an obscurity. Francini, yeah, I mean, he had had some solid seasons, hadn't he? But he really shines like a diamond and stays with us. I think he's probably the guy that lasts the longest.
Yeah, I want to say till about 93 or 94 he'll stay.
Yeah, yeah. So he hangs around as well. So, I mean, yeah, he's obviously we're really excited about Careca, but Francini as well. Makes a huge difference to our style of play. And what we really start seeing here is what Ruud Gullit would probably call Shakshi football. I mean, we start to play some really, really nice stuff here. Anyway, yeah, so that's great.
We'll talk more about Ruud Gullit in this show.
Yeah.
Careca, yes, you're right. The numbers are there, and he's not sort of an obscure figure. He's one of the top Brazilian strikers at this time and was a part of the 82 national team and the 86. I think he was more prolific in the 86 team, yeah. But the 82 team that you know, my brother-in-law Andrew, who's from Sao Paulo, says that they should have won the whole thing. But yeah, everybody at this time was Careca crazy in Brazil. So for us to get him, you know, the best, we have one of the top Italian strikers in Giordano. We have one, you know, the best player in the world, Argentinian in Maradona, and then the top Brazilians, you know, in Careca. It just makes for such a, you know, special time.
Copa Italia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So let's get started. Coppa Italia starts again 5 games before the season, 2 weeks before the season starts. And Napoli again will run the table. I'll quickly go over it. We're not going to touch too much on it. But Modena 4-0, Livorno 2-0, Udinese 2-0, Padova 1-0, Fiorentina 2-1. Napoli finish up top with Fiorentina 11-1 in the group stage here, goals for and against. And Giordano, Maradona, Careca, actually Magica begins on August 23rd versus Modena, because 2 from Giordano, 1 from Maradona, 1 from Careca. And basically that's the story of this group stage, is Magica all over the place. One thing to note, though, is that Careca's last appearance until end of September would be the Padova match, where he scores to make it 1-0 and win the match. No, Alexi Lalas was not on that squad, Frank. He would appear later. But
great guy, great hair.
Yeah, but Careca is missing for the beginning of the Serie A campaign. Didn't really find out why. Tried searching for the reason why. Not mentioned anywhere. But Frank, if you have any sort of insight.
He's the only reason that I really noticed it is in all the highlights, it always cuts back to Kreka sat in the stands with a t-shirt on. So
right,
obviously people were desperate to see him on the pitch, but yeah, I don't know why he didn't start the season either, I'm afraid.
Well, the season would start though with or without him. Away to Cesena, 1-0, Salvatore Bagni, that man again, my friend, in the 16th minute. Maradona with a good chance to Romano, a low cross, good save. I'm reading your notes here for a second there, Frank. The goal
don't
came.
Don't do that, Rafa. Don't do that, man. That's going to confuse the best of us.
Well, Maradona had a goal called back in this one, but Bagni's goal, just special, man. I mean, here he is again. In the first match of the season, back from the Scudetto, ready to defend the title, and boom, here he is.
I was waxing lyrical about him last time round, but again, loved what he did for the majority of this season too. It's a point worth making, isn't it? That people, I think a lot of people thought it was a one-off, the Scudetto, and there was some, you know, all sorts of weird things written, all the usual stuff that Neapolitans have to put up with, regionalism and narrow-minded nonsense. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on the team to come back and say, look, this wasn't a fluke. And you could see that a bit, I think, in this game, Rafa. I mean, I don't think from what I've seen we're at our best here, but we still got the win. And the Bagni finish was great. He hits a cross. Couldn't quite see who it was at right back, and he just hits it first time. Lovely stuff. Bagni, starting where he left off.
Yeah, and then we would get, a few days later, Napoli would debut in a European Cup, Champions League, it's known as Champions League these days. So Napoli, Real Madrid, actually Real Madrid, Napoli, because we're at the Bernabeu, and it's an empty stadium. Not sure why. I didn't notice that either.
Well, there was fan trouble in the previous season. How typical is this, Rafa? I mean, literally from the beginning of our relationship with this competition, we've had the worst luck with draws, haven't we, man? I mean, we get the champions of Spain in the first round. And back then, it's just a straight knockout competition, right?
It is. And, you know, and there's no format for the draw. There's you pick them, you get them. You know, you get the champions of Italy versus the champions of Spain. No one's seeded. It's just a, you know, luck of the draw. And, you know, ironically enough, and we'll talk about, you know, Silvio Berlusconi and the Milan team later on. But ironically enough, he is part of a coalition to form the current Champions League. And it was this match where the officials realized that you get a team like Napoli and Real Madrid, you know, Napoli as big as they were then, in the first round of a Champions Cup, the way it was, that it's not necessarily a model that would benefit fans, money, you know, and they would go ahead and revise this later on. So this is the beginning of that revolution here. But here is also where Maradona's agent, Guillermo Coppola, will open negotiations with management to extend his contract, which is up at the end of 1989. But we're looking at, you know, let's make some more money for Diego here.
Yeah, and he's definitely earned it, hasn't he? Although I think we actually see him explode this season, but we'll talk about when he really sets himself on fire on the pitch. Yeah, give the man whatever he wants. I mean, give him a dolphin butler. I don't care. You know, they have to keep him there. And that goes into quite a big story in the following years, isn't it? But I mean, this game was weird, Rafa, wasn't it? I mean, no one in that massive stadium, I found it a very strange experience having a look at this one. And We didn't play particularly well. I don't know what you think, Rafa.
No, we didn't. First day jitters, maybe.
I think there was a bit of that. And also, it's really hard, as you're saying, at the moment in the Bundesliga. It must be very difficult for players to suddenly get their head around a completely different atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we would roll on, though. A few days later, Napoli would open up the San Paolo, the season at the San Paolo, with a 2-1 victory over Ascoli. Bagni and Giordano for Napoli, Scarafoni for Ascoli. And I've noted here that Hugo Maradona, the younger brother of Diego, would come in for Ascoli in the 58th minute.
Yeah,
which was pretty cool to think about.
And he had a few nice touches as well, I thought.
Absolutely, he did. But let's talk about Maradona for this goal. I mean,
what
unbelievable assist, unbelievable with the backspin. What an amazing assist.
I mean, it was straight out of it was just pure Maradona. I mean, we talk a lot about him dribbling and beating players or scoring from free kicks, but don't forget that this guy is also one of the greatest passers of the ball. And it's a sort of 35-yard pass, isn't it? And then, as you mentioned, the backspin, and Bagni's running onto it, isn't he? And the backspin is just perfect for him to hit it. And just like the goal he scored at the beginning of the season, first time, bottom right-hand corner, just glorious team goal. And we see a lot more of that this season. We see a lot more team moves with multiple passes and good assists. I think we see quite a lot less of just players following up on long-range passes or Maradona dribbles. It feels different as a team. Perhaps we haven't quite got there yet, but I really noticed things feeling different. I don't know if you picked up on anything.
I picked up on it, and it would become more evident as the season would continue. And we would go over to Pisa for the third game. Now, here we lose 1-0 on the pitch. It's Careca's Serie A debut. We are eventually, though, awarded a 2-0 victory because of an object that was thrown on the pitch that hits Renica as he's walking off the pitch for halftime by a fan. So he'd go down, he'd be cut open, and
I mean, it really hits him properly. It almost knocks him out. I mean, he's on his back, there's medical attention. It was horrible to watch.
Right. I remember watching him get up and be very, unstable, and he would not return to the match. He'd be substituted out. And after the match, which, again, was a 1-0 loss, Pisa would get a penalty kick after a foul on Dunga. There's a name. In the box. And they would convert the penalty kick, a Scolosa penalty kick. But in the courts, a few days later, Napoli are awarded a 2-0 victory because of the incident. Something like that would happen again in a few seasons later, wouldn't it?
It happens this season. To Milan as well. There's a firework, and the game is awarded to Milan. So it's there's obviously a interesting time for Tifosi and crowds and all that kind of stuff. It's a difficult period, isn't it? Across
Europe,
football like that. But
late 80s fandom there, you know.
Yeah. But the We don't play well. And also, Paul Elliott gets sent off, doesn't he, for Pisa? He's an English centre-back, right?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does, with a foul on, I believe, Bagni. I do remember that. So 10-man Pisa would beat Napoli, but not in the tabellone. We get the win. Beppe Materazzi is the manager of Pisa here, father of 06 World Cup legend Marco Materazzi, which I found pretty cool. But we move on to the second leg of the UEFA Champions Cup, the Coppa del Campione, and Napoli would take on Real Madrid at a packed San Paolo, 83,300 people. 4 million lira in gate receipts, and I did the numbers. That translates to about $3,000 American dollars back in 1987.
What?
Which, you know, now, I don't know, is maybe double that? I don't know. But, you know, it's a lot for back then, and it's a record. It's our first Champions Cup match at the São Paulo, so it's a happening. And right away, Francini would open his account for Napoli. And I'm sorry, even in the scenario that we were in, the fact that we lost it, we were out early, there's no better way to open an account for a club than against Real Madrid in your first ever Champions Cup match at São Paulo. That, for me, had to have been a special moment for Francini.
Absolutely, and it happens early on. So we lost the first, tied 2-0. So we need to score early, and we do, don't we? Is it like the eighth minute, seventh minute?
Yes.
It's not a particularly memorable goal. Correa's involved, but yeah, what a way to open your account. Can I talk about how we're playing here? Because I think it's quite a good match to just spend a little bit of time with.
Sure, it's a very different match than the first leg, isn't it?
Yeah, and our starting 11 is Gurella, Ferrara, Ferrario, Renica, Francini, Di Napoli, Bagni, Romano, Creca, Maradona, Giordano. Now, and I tweeted about this, is that the best starting 11 in the history of the club? It could be, I think.
It very well could be. You know, there's quality all over the place there. That's a good shout there, Frank. I don't think there's a better starting 11 for Napoli in this era.
There are no weaknesses, and Ciro Ferrara plays quite a lot of the season at right back, doesn't he? I'm less good. We need our man Ken on this, don't we, really, Rafa?
We do.
But there's a switch. We played a lot of 5-3-2 in the previous seasons, and this is very much 3 up front, 4-3-3, and it's a much nicer way to play. And Romano, I think he has a great season, doesn't he?
He sure does. He's got a good stint with Napoli, actually.
Yeah, some deep line playmaker, great eye for a pass, dictates the tempo of the match, and a 4-3-3, as we've seen more recently with Sarri and people like Jorginho, having that deep line person who can dictate it, and Bagni's he's very happy to come back and then come back forward again. And it allows Di Napoli to sort of burst down the right. And the other thing to bear in mind is that Francini is bombing forward on the left-hand side so much. It's, you know, really, really far forward all the time. And it does come back to get us a few times. We leave ourselves very open on the right-hand side. Anyway, I'm not going to go on too much about it, but I just think it's worth saying that this feels much more modern. Like, I recognise the style of play much more than what I've seen in previous seasons. And it's really exciting to watch, isn't it?
It is. And you mentioned modern. The modernization of football begins here, especially in Italy, because you have, like I mentioned earlier, Berlusconi comes in and purchases Milan the season before, and institutes a new type of football that Italy's never seen. But then you also have this Napoli team who's being able to you know, change their tactics and be a little more versatile during situations. And before that, it was really a lot of, you know, score and defend, you know, and it was a very old school style of football before Maradona would come in, and Berlusconi's Milan, and then Inter would come in, and you know, Juve would return. It all happens here. Yeah, and Samp too. Exactly. Yeah. So it doesn't
quite...
it doesn't quite work out well for us.
It hurts to watch it, though, as well, because it really...
Yeah. Watch the match if you can. I think YouTube and Footballia has the full match this second leg. You should watch it, especially for the first half alone. I mean, Butragueña would end up getting the equalizer in the match in the 44th, and that will be enough to eliminate Napoli from the Champions Cup. really quick too, Frank. It's said to be here that Bianchi but Moggi and Fratellino would start to become a little reluctant to spend a little more money on Maradona after this result. So the talks for renewal kind of fade away a little bit here, and that's according to Maradona and his biography. But it could have a lot to do with the fact that Napoli make it to these UEFA competitions and are really not performing too well. But Frank, yeah,
we didn't do so well the previous year as well. But you never know; these things might turn around. Tune in next week. But yeah. But as you say, the atmosphere is fantastic. The early goal means that we're chasing the game and we play well. It's a very, very good Real Madrid side who have their, what they called again, I can't remember now, but they've got it's the opposite. They've got these five homegrown players.
Oh,
That I can't remember what they're called now, but vintage Real side, we go toe-to-toe, doesn't quite happen. Let's not dwell on it, though.
That's okay, because we roll on. Match number four at Avellino is a 1-0 victory. Carnevale will get the winning goal after coming on 4 minutes earlier for Careca. He'd come in and get a glorious match winner, Frank. Vinicio, the manager of Avellino, he's a Napoli boy. We've mentioned him before. But Carnevale would get the winner. Very, very nice goal, too.
Wonderful to have a player of his quality on the bench, which becomes a bit of an issue for him over the course of the season. But again, that's, we've been talking about the club being run well. The wheels haven't come off yet. That's now in our fourth year of smart thinking. And we've got, this magic car, which is great. But we've also got a dude who's a fantastic player on the bench. And when he comes on throughout the season, whenever you see him come on, he's motivated to get that goal, isn't he?
He sure is, yeah. And, like you said, good to have on the bench. He featured much more the season before, but, smart to keep him around even when picking up Carnevale. That's another thing, is having a good bench was pretty rare, too. Teams would win championships with 12, 13, 14, 15 players. Now we've got, 16, 17-ish, and keeping him around, being able to keep him for this was really important as well. Napoli would now have Pescara, and at San Paolo, Napoli absolutely destroy Pescara, and I believe this starts a trend of them destroying Pescara. There's a big result in the next season as well. Bagni, again, opening goal. He's a capocannoniere for Napoli, Frank.
That's so far.
23rd minutes, he's on three goals now, but he would get the essential match winner. And then Romano on the 29th, Careca would open up his account with Napoli.
What a goal.
Serie A. What an amazing goal. Maradona, from the penalty spot, he'd open up his Serie A account for this season as well in the 54th. Giordano would get a penalty kick in the 75th, and then an own goal by Benigni would get us to six. Napoli completely destroy Pescara here.
Yeah, and I think there's one, the Careca's first league goal for us is this beautiful, it's a double 1-2 is what I'd call it, with Bagni over the course of about 70 metres.
Oh, yeah.
And we, as you say, we destroy them. We just completely go through them. And then Careca ends up with a close range finish at the far post, but it's a real indication of this change of style, I think, where we're not afraid to pass through teams, if that makes sense, because we've got all three of those midfields, Romano, Di Napoli and Bagni, can all pass the ball, but we've also got an attacking trident that can move and confuse markers. You have Careca and Giordano, usually they swap either being on the left or the right-hand side of the attacking trident, and you've got Maradona coming deep. So you put all those things together, and you've got this, and a team like Pescara, that not a particularly great team, that it's just not fair, is it, Rafa? It's no contest.
It's no contest. Napoli after five matches. Every five matches, I'm going to pretty much read where we're at so that we can put into context what happens at the end of the season. Five matches, Napoli are undefeated, 10 points. Fiorentina, Roma behind us, and Sampdoria with 7. Inter, Milan, Juve, Pescara, Verona, 6 points. So we are in first again, and it's looking pretty good. However, we will hit a bump in the road. Roma, we end up going to Rome and draw 1-1. Pruzzo will get the opening goal at the beginning of the second half, but then Francini would get his first Serie A goal with Napoli in the 67th minute. Careca would end up getting a red card here, and Renica would actually get his second yellow 10 minutes after. So a 9-man Napoli end up coming back, drawing Roma, and holding for 22 minutes, Frank.
Yeah, and again, it shows that we're not just a one-trick pony, that we've got that teamwork and that grinta that we talked about that really got us to Scudetto. So when we need to, we've got those guys who can think a bit, hold on to the ball, and also defend. Also worth mentioning, our goal came from a Maradona set piece, a corner. And he particularly noticed his ability with set pieces this season, Rafa. You know, not just scoring free kicks, but also corners and crossing free kicks into the box. I mean, so fundamental to us, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He is. Let's move on, though. Empoli, we would get Empoli at the San Paolo, 2-1. They would actually take the lead with an extra goal, and then Maradona would get a double, a 17th-minute penalty kick and a 35th-minute goal. The highlights on YouTube, Frank, here were hilarious to me, and I'll bring this up. And I don't know if you caught this too, but the reporter who is reporting on this match as the highlights are rolling continues to call Empoli Ascoli. And after the third or fourth time, the host of the show from the background ends up correcting him. And I laughed so hard. Just be like, Empoli, Empoli.
That's what that was. I was trying to work out what was going on.
Oh, my goodness. It was so funny. Like, and I noticed, I said, didn't we just play Ascoli in the second match of the season? And the host would just – I'll post it on our Twitter. It's so funny.
It's the great thing about going through this stuff is you get all that.
You get all these little gems and Easter eggs, right? But this for me was a Maradona show. The penalty, to me, should have been a red card. That shot that was taken – what's his name for Uruguay against Ghana in the World Cup in 2010?
Luis Suarez. Yeah.
Esque. Also a really cool note here is that Empoli on the field for Empoli was one future manager, Walter Mazzarri.
Hey, glorious Walter Mazzarri.
Yes, sir.
There we go. This could have been the beginning of his love affair. But, what do you make of Romano's ball for Maradona's second goal?
Amazing.
I mean, he's got that kind of deep-lying playmaker through ball. I didn't know about this guy, really, you know, before we really looked at things in detail. What a Rolls-Royce of a player, Francesco Romano. Absolutely. Yeah, I really enjoyed watching him play this season.
And this is why we do this, Frank, so that we can learn about the team around Maradona, because the stigma of Maradona was, you know, the man to, achieve the heights that Napoli's never seen, and he really did have so many, members of the supporting cast around him that they go so overlooked because it's Diego. You know, if you've got someone who's not as flamboyant or, you know, popular or controversial or, you know, good as him doing all this, then you're talking about a total team effort. But this is Maradona, so everybody just knows who that is. And you miss out on the Francinis and the Bagnis and the Romanos and the Carecas and the, you know, Giordanos and all that, you know, and it's really cool to see that.
I've really enjoyed watching it. He came from Triestina, didn't he, last season? And yeah, and I think it's also before that position got really fashionable as well, that deep lying creative midfielder. you know, shades of Jorginho, but also Pirlo and those sorts of players. So again, anyone listening looking to look at the highlights, keep an eye out for Romano. Often he wears the number 11 shirt, doesn't he?
He does. He features quite a bit in this season as well. Yeah, so, you know, as we bid adieu to Rocco, we will also...
Ciao, Rocco.
He waves goodbye. He's got to go do some schoolwork. We will now travel to Como, those dastardly Como, and we can't buy a win at Como, can we? 0-0 is the result here. This is the third straight trip to Como where we come away without a victory. There were no highlights for this, so I didn't really get to see any anything. But it's worth mentioning that here, Berlusconi will actually arrange a meeting with Diego and Guillermo Coppola. And I want to talk about that for a second, Frank, because there was real chatter about this guy, Silvio Berlusconi, coming in and just causing such a ruckus in Italian football, and he was ready to buy Maradona from Napoli. He was wined and dined, it obviously wouldn't, you know, end up happening. But I mean, he pulled out all the stops to try to acquire Diego, didn't he?
And thank God that didn't happen. I mean, we're talking about Magica, but imagine Maradona, Van Basten and Hullitz up front. I mean, that's terrifying. I don't think it's Maradona's style to sign for. Well, you've got to remember that Milan of then was different to Milan of now. You know, they hadn't won a league title for, was it 11 years?
It was 9 years that they hadn't won a league title.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And obviously Berlusconi had come in and spent a load of money and a helicopter and all that stuff. But I couldn't see Maradona doing that. And also, I think he writes in his book, doesn't he, that there's no way he would have made it out of Naples alive if he'd signed for
Yeah, I think the intrigue was there and the you know, curiosity was there for Maradona. But at the end of the day, he knew he wasn't going to. It's reported that Gianni Mina, who recently passed away, but a very, very popular journalist in, you know, Italy and in Naples, heard about the meeting and published it in December. And it was about a day or two after where Fedlaino would double, triple the number that Berlusconi was offering. And the rest is history. He would resign. More on that dastardly Silvio Berlusconi later, though. Go ahead, Frank.
No. Just this game. You tell us what this game is, because it's a good one.
Napoli-Torino, 3-1 Napoli. Maradona will quickly open the account for Napoli. And then Careca would get his first double of the season. 44th minute Careca goal. Bergeron would get a 76th minute, but then Careca would get the 91st minute. You know, Diego, when he takes a free kick.
Oh, it's beautiful.
We can't stress that enough, and everybody knows this, but notice the low free kick through the wall here. And it's just classic Maradona vision, you know? Yeah. And the Careca's first was in the match was from this magical Giordano touch and cross. Just an amazing, amazing action. It is Magica at work, my friend. Magica at work.
Yeah, beautiful team goal. Also, just before... the guy who feeds Giordano is Romano. So you've got Romano to Giordano, does this, as you say, amazing thing. Careca finishes. We're seeing the whole team make really excellent contributions. Like you see, like every part of that move is really beautiful to watch and just really exciting. All three goals, in fact, in this game are really nice, aren't they? I mean, Careca's third. He's released by Maradona, isn't he? So yeah, as you say, Rafa, we're really seeing Magica beginning to click here, aren't we?
We are. And this is after... there's one more left. Inter 1-1. after that one, we would go to San Siro, and Careca would open up the match with in the 19th, and Fernando De Napoli own goal in the 58th minute. But this, for me, was Zenga versus Garella. And how Garella never made it to the Italian national team is beyond me. He doesn't play a single match for Italy. And
oh, really? I didn't know that. That's unbelievable.
Well, I'm looking at the highlights of this match, and I'm noticing that, you know, Zenga and Garella, you probably have two of the best keepers in Italy right here. So I look it up, and Garella was not an Italian national team player, but Zenga would go on to have quite the career in Italy, with Italy anyway, and it just blew me away. It really
did.
He's
not a very glamorous looking person, is he, Garella? It was his birthday, wasn't it, about 10 days ago, so it's the day before my birthday, in fact.
Oh, nice.
16th of May, Garella's birthday, and so I tweeted out a picture of him, and someone said something like, he looked like he could eat a calzone in one bite. And he's got this sort of, he does look a little bit, he doesn't really, how can I say this? He doesn't look like a natural athlete, does he?
You know, his jersey was baggy. The Scudetto and Coppa Italia were off the mark. I wonder if he sewed it on himself. He didn't look like a glamorous footballer. No, but, you know, it doesn't really.
Brilliant goalkeeper.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, Inter and Napoli again 1-1. So after 10, Napoli are 9 wins and 1 draw, 17 points in the standings. Milan and Sampdoria trail them by 3 with 14, Roma 13, Juve 12, Fiorentina, Inter, Verona 10. And then Napoli, Juve at the San Paolo. We do it again, Frank, after, you know, 29 years of losses to Juve. We finally beat them again at the San Paolo, straight win at the San Paolo, 2-1. And Fernando De Napoli would open up that one. Cabrini would get a 75th minute, which would scare us a bit, but then there you go. 86th minute, Diego Maradona penalty kick, cool as you like. We win. We win against Juve.
A great scenes after the Maradona penalty, as I'm sure you can imagine. Not by everyone to be nice about a Juve player, but Michael Laudrup is fantastic in this game. What a player he was. It's interesting watching these highlights. I don't think I've caught Platini in his great era. The Juve player that's really caught my eye has been Laudrup. But despite all his talent, what is that, 3 in a row now against Juve in the league?
That is 3 in a row in the league against Juventus.
That's a
yes.
Nice feeling, isn't it? Can we go back in a time machine, Rafa?
I wish we could. Juve would have 11 corner kicks to Napoli's 2. So naturally, Juve's goal came from a corner. But Napoli beat Juve again. And to be honest with you, we see that, and then we see a little bit of that in the Cavani days, where Napoli at the San Paolo against Juve can't lose for a little bit there. So you know, it hasn't happened in a while. This past year, we beat them 2-1 with Insigne and Zielinski, but...
Oh, I love that game.
That was a good one.
The other day.
Yeah,
that cheered me up.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights of the season, I feel.
Yeah, I agree.
But we're going to move on to Napoli-Verona, another match at the San Paolo. And this one is a 4-1 victory, Napoli over Verona. There he is again, man. Fourth of the season, opening goal of the match, 14th minute, Salvatore Bagni. And what a goal this was, Frank.
Just Golazzo. That's all I've written. It's just the top right-hand corner.
It's a striker's goal. I mean, you know... This is a right, you know, right back sometimes, you know, defensive midfielder scoring a striker's goal. This guy was so all round. It was incredible.
Top bins. I mean, he's like practically first name on my all time 11 now. Obviously, we know who the first name is, but he might be the second name. I just love everything about him as a player. It's great. Just, yeah, Golazzo, top bins. Love it.
That's right. Giordano would get the second goal. Maradona would get the third in the 54th minute, Bagni would actually give up an own goal in this one too. And then Giordano would put it away. Well, it was already away, but would get a 91st minute. And we head into the Christmas break. Now, the break, we are 21 points. Roma and Sampdoria are 17, so it's a 4-point lead. Milan with 16, so we're 5 over Milan. And then everyone else is kind of in the rear view, 13, Cesena with 12, Inter with 12, Juve 13. So this is Christmas, and this is basically the end of the unbeaten streak, because when we return, we have to go to Stadio San Siro, and we don't fare well over there, do we, Frank?
No, and there's a bit in Maradona's book where he said, I don't know if this is right, that up until this point we got 87% of the points on offer, which was a record, and we were on fire. And this whole idea that it was a fluke was nonsense, but we come down to earth with the biggest bang you could possibly imagine in this game away to Milan, 3rd of January 1987. I mean, we're just miles off them, aren't we? Completely miles off them.
We are. Really quickly, I want to read this passage from John Ludden's book, Once Upon a Time in Naples. This is basically the the genesis of AC Milan here. But alas, morning reluctantly broke, and Naples grabbed some much-needed rest before throwing itself back once more into fiesta mode. As a new day dawned, only the most fanatical tifosi remained partying, bleary-eyed but steadfastly refusing to let go of the moment, grasping in their hand like a gust of wind, only to watch sadly as it slipped free, blown away on the ocean breeze. The last of the rockets were fired almost half-heartedly, lacking the thunderous impact of the previous night's extravaganza. We're talking about Napoli winning the Scudetto. A lone thud spat and spluttered over the bay, whilst sporadic crackles of fireworks echoed rather wearily in the distance. The city that never slept fell for once into serene slumber, where the dark blue ocean melted into the sky, a red sun lazily rose, and Neapolitans bade a fond farewell to what had truly been bella giornata, a most beautiful day. They would truly never see its like again. Into the next chapter, it was no delusion. It was no illusion. There was a blue moon over Naples. Diego Maradona had led Napoli to a peak so high, there remained only one way left to go. The holy grail to claim the Scudetto was achieved, but there were those who desperately wanted it back at any price. Huge face had been lost in the north. Suddenly, a new enemy emerged, stronger and deadlier than any that had gone before. The Neapolitans had to be brought down. Plans were underway to make this so. A man for whom money was no concern busied himself in bringing together a majestic array of the world's best players in Milan. It would be a team like no other, rivaling any of the past great sides. Make no mistake, the exalted red and black of the Rossoneri were coming. This is where it begins, Frank, because we go to Milan on a absolute tear in the season, and we get stonewalled by this team, and we open the goal scoring in the game 1-0 Careca, but then fantastic pass. Maradona, you know, we're on our way to another, you know, this is Napoli, this is the second Scudetto, right? But then here comes Milan, Colombo, Virdis, Gullit, and Donadoni. Berlusconi buys Milan at the end of 85 and 86. His first full season with influence is 86-87. And here they are in 87-88. You know, and Milan before this were riddled with controversy, relegation because of the controversy, back to Serie A, but then relegated on the pitch. And their former owner, Giusy Farina, would go to exile in South Africa. He was accused of stealing money from that Milan. Milan were going bankrupt until Berlusconi decides to buy this club. And that's it, man. The story goes the way it does.
And here we see a real masterclass from Ruud Gullit and Ody Gosaki's first season with Milan, right? Obviously, he's very famous for his 4-4-2, but here is actually playing three up front, and Hullet's on the kind of right-hand side of it. And he just destroys us. And I was talking before about Francini, and he likes to go bomb down that left-hand side. So to put a player who has just won the Ballon d'Or, Ruud Gullit won the Ballon d'Or, and he dedicated it to Nelson Mandela, who was in prison at the time. So you've got the Ballon d'Or winner running into acres of space on that left-hand side, our left-hand side. He's on the right, and he destroys us. You know, there's a cross, and Gullit scores, and just that's the best performance I've seen against us since we started watching Maradona's Napoli. I mean, it's a proper, you know, you can see why Gullit is regarded as one of the greatest players of all time.
This is the team that I hated as a child. It wasn't Juventus. I know the rivalry between Napoli and Juve existed before. My father would tell me stories about it. But as a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old child, watching Milan do their thing while Napoli was doing theirs made me cringe when they ended up winning, you know, more than us, because, you know, Maradona would leave, but Milan would remain the best. And for me, it was Milan, man. Not so much now. You know, I'm a little more relaxed with Milan. I know a lot of Milan fans. They're very
nice.
We've
got good friends.
We have great friends.
Serie A Sit Down, haven't we?
Yes, Serie A Sit Down. Frank and Richard. Milan Club Philly. We have, you know, the guys up in Montreal for Milan Weekly Pod, Vince and Presidente there, David at Milan Club Philly is a buddy of mine. Yes, Richard and Frank, they're awesome people. Just Matteo Bonetti, very cool. Anytime I speak to him, he's very cool. So I love the Milan community, I really do. But I'm sorry, guys. This was my, you know, Michael Jordan as a Knicks fan. Couldn't stand them, but respect the quality that they would put forth. But look at who comes in. Van Basten, Gullit, you know, Colombo, Musi, Ancelotti would get purchased in this season. Costa Curta would come to the team this season. And yeah, out were like guys like Haitley and Wilkins and Galderisi and Di Bartolomei. So like the old guard is gone, but look.
And you got Maldini's really coming into his own now as well.
Yes,
he plays about 30 games this season. Costa Curta is still quite young here.
Well, he's a youngster, but yeah, you know, yeah. He's coming in, yeah.
I mean, and also you've got one of the greatest managers of all time in the form of Arrigo Sacchi. So I think, although at this stage he was raised a lot of eyebrows, didn't he? Being appointed, but he was a visionary. It's also worth mentioning that Van Basten struggles with injury a lot in this season. So I don't think he plays in this game, but when he does play, they're very much an attacking three. So I think one way of looking at the season is really a kind of fight between these two wonderful attacking tridents. You've got Magica playing for us, and you've got Virdis, who's a really, I didn't know much about him before this game. He won the Capo Canieri, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes, season. He was Capo Cavalieri winner last season, correct.
Yeah, and then you got Virdis, Van Basten, and Gullit as a trident. Both fantastic trios, actually. But here we get completely destroyed. But I think Sacchi was smart with really attacking our left-hand side. I think he spotted that Francini likes to bomb forward, and Gullit mm-hmm. just destroyed us. Anyway. 4-1, wasn't it, in the end?
4-1 is the score. It's our first loss of the season. We are still ahead. And that's that. We go to now the Coppa Italia round of 16, first leg, Fiorentina at San Paolo. We would lose 3-2. Diego would great score. Careca would score. It was a great game. Ramon Diaz would get the 80th minute winner for Fiorentina, so three away goals for them. So we are down in that. That's on the 6th. Couple days later, we would kind of make up for the loss with an absolutely tremendous victory over Fiorentina. And it is our zoom-in match of the episode. 4-0 Napoli, Giordano with two, Careca, Maradona, Magica, Frank. Magica again.
Yeah, and this for me is when, because we talked about them coming together and stuff beforehand, but this game is a wonderful advert just for attacking partnerships. And Fiorentina, really important team this season. They're the only team to beat Milan from open play. They beat us in the cup. Sven-Goran Eriksson's in charge. They've got Roberto Baggio and Nicola Berti playing as kids. Baggio really coming into his own. And he's great in this match, isn't he, Baggio? You see these little flashes of genius. Sure. But we open with this wonderful set piece.
Oh, yeah.
From Maradona. Everyone's expecting him to shoot, and he plays this kind of no eyes through ball for Giordano, who's still got quite a lot to do. He's on the right hand channel and lifts it over the keeper. And it just shows a team that is having fun with each other. Don't you reckon? It's not the sort of goal you'd expect early on, having lost two games in a row.
Exactly. It's a wonderful shot from a very difficult angle there. But the defense is fooled by Maradona, you know, and that's what I mean by the magic of him at a free kick position. Whether he's taking the shot or he's setting up the goal, you just never know what he's going to do. And what you do know is it's probably going to result in a goal, and it's deadly. So it just, the vision he had for this time was just amazing. Careca's goal in the 33rd. And then 2 minutes later, Matador.
quite an acute angle, isn't it? I mean, just an unsavable, perfect free kick, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's amazing. I can't get enough of it. Giordano would score 75th minute. First half domination for Napoli here.
Yeah, we're absolutely all over them. But yeah, that Maradona free kick has shades of a few times he's done it where he's been basically at an angle where you'd expect to cross, and he just gets it in. I mean, it's just incredible. One thing to mention about Magica that I noticed here watching the whole game is that all three track back a lot. They help out in midfield. They work incredibly hard. This isn't, you know, three flair players that are just, you know, doing their thing up front. These are three guys that are giving everything for the team as well. And that was something that was really, really nice to see. But the fourth goal for me, Rafa, is the real piece of magic. Forgive the pun.
Yeah. Bruno Giordano. Why don't you set it up, Frank? You're better at this, man. Set it up.
We're not better. We both love this. I mean, it starts with the Careca back heel, right?
Yes.
So Careca back heels it. Who picks it up off him? Diego Maradona, who then absolutely perfect through ball to Giordano, hits it first time, glorious finish. And it's just the fact that all three of those players are being improvisational, flair, finesse. It's all that talent and combination together. It's definitely in my top five favorite Napoli goals of all time, because it is, if you had to explain Magica to someone in 20 seconds, you play in that clip. That is how it works. And it also shows Maradona as a great number 10. That three ball's just perfect. Anyway, I love it.
No, it is perfect. It's just the personification of Magica. You know, you see it in the beginning of the season, and you see it again a little later on, you know, and anytime the three of them score in the same match, I write Magica. But this goal, like you mentioned, is the personification of it. You know, the back heel, like you mentioned, from Careca, the vision again from Maradona. And that's the thing, is, you know, one hand washes the other. Yes, Maradona had a squad around him, but if it's not Diego Maradona in that position, do we perform as well? And I don't think the answer is yes at all. I mean, there's just a special aura around this club with him. And yeah, that's just, you know,
isn't there something great about a strike partnership though, Rafa? You know,
it is. You know, and when you have all three firing on the same cylinder, you know, instead of just two, and yeah, it's an amazing thing. It's sort of a la, you know, 16-17. Napoli. Absolutely. with Dries and Matic and Jose and Lorenzo, all just firing on the cylinders that you know they're all just kind of meshing so well together that they're all scoring double figure goals.
For me, I was trying to think about this. If you had to do a modern day equivalent, it'd be like having a front three of you'd have Messi as Maradona, you'd have, for me, Cavani as Careca. I think they really remind me of each other. Perfect number nines. I couldn't think of someone for Giordano. I was thinking he's more of a striker than Callahan, but in terms of the way he works for the team and can cross the ball, he reminds me of Callahan. But, you know, all very different players, but really complement each other. Anyway, I could talk hours about this game, man.
Sure.
But I'm not going to. Don't worry, because we've got plenty to talk about.
That's okay. You know, the zoom in is for us to watch the whole match, and we can comment on what we want to, but those are the recommendations to go watch. Like, that's why we watch. We want you to go watch. So this is very, very modern too, you know, like we'd mentioned before, it's a very modern style. So it's a lot of fun to watch. It's not just some old match you guys have to sit through. It's very fun. We would continue.
And you see Baggio, one last thing.
Exactly. No, you're right. And a decent Fiorentina, as you mentioned. We just lost to them at San Paolo in Coppa a few days before. So now we're coming in for Serie A, and you would imagine they're ready for us. But here we are just pulling this off, and it's wonderful. And yeah, the emergence of one Roberto Baggio. You know, Totti is another name I would think about for – Maradona style, probably without all the flair, and he was a little bigger, but the vision and the ability, maybe for an Italian counterpart to Maradona. But you know, I don't think anyone else is better than Messi in that department. So,
cool.
Okay, so Sampdoria, we would go to Genoa and play Sampdoria, and it wouldn't be until 87th minute Maradona goal to take the win here, but the Marassi was a disaster again. Frank, bad pitches, but what a goal by Diego, huh? Nice, just like as good a goal as you can in these conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Big long ball from Giordano, who for some reason playing deep. Might be a free kick actually. It's not cleared properly, and Maradona just hits it outside the box, and it's in again. Technically so difficult to pull that off, but we got so used to it, haven't we, seeing these moments of genius, that it's almost like, oh yeah, cool, he's just hit it first time on the end of the area.
It's so hard to do a top like five Maradona goals, because there's about 25-30 that are just otherworldly, you know. We would win this one, and it's match 15. We are at the halfway point. Napoli 25 points, Milan 22, 3 points behind us. Roma, Sampdoria 20, Inter 17, so everybody's kind of out of there. 11 wins, 3 draws, 1 loss. Can you start a season? Can you have a better beginning of the season than that? Aside, obviously, you take that Milan loss back, but honestly, yeah. 11 wins, 3 draws, 1 loss. Amazing. Amazing.
We're a machine at this point. We're a machine.
Total machine. We'd go to Firenze on the 20th to play Coppa Italia second leg, where we would get a 3-1 victory and advance to the quarterfinals, 5-4 on aggregate, 2 goals by Carnevale, 1 by Renica. So we take care of Fiorentina there. And then we go to – actually, we go back to San Paolo and play Cesena 2-0, Careca in the 9th. Maradona in the 41st minute, 7 goals for Careca, 9 for Maradona. I mean, 1-2 in the Capocannoniere so far.
Lovely stuff.
And we'd keep winning at Ascoli, 3-1. Maradona in the 11th on a penalty kick, Giordano in the 25th, and Careca in the 83rd. Magica, baby, magica.
Yeah, and I've just made a note here. This is the best we've played as a team since Maradona arrives. I mean, this game is incredible. Again, really, really nice game. What I like about this is Careca sets up Giordano for the second, and the favor's returned for the third. You know, and Banyi's fouled for the Maradona penalty. You know, these guys, they're all making contributions right the way through the pitch, and it's really lovely, flowing, attacking football.
We would actually go ahead and beat Pisa in the next match on the pitch at the San Paolo, 2-1. Reinica would open up in the 13th minute. Diego Maradona would get a 75th minute goal that, I mean, again, when Diego takes a free kick, it's magic, man. He's got the magic touch. Filardi, an own goal not sure when that was. I put 75th, but it was I'm sorry, it was a 77th. It was not too far. Doesn't matter. We beat Pisa.
We got the points.
We are 29 of 30 points, and that is at home, and that is a new Italian record that is set during this game. The Reinica goal was by a Maradona free kick. Giordano almost scores the same style of goal. Actually, Reinica almost does it again. Sorry, from the opposite side, but it's saved, and Giordano hits the crossbar. So Napoli, yeah, really does. It picks up so, like, it's like that loss to Milan just didn't phase us. It would normally phase, especially a team like you said that had just bought the Ballon d'Or and are revolutionizing. We're not phased by that loss right now. We're doing what we have to do to win this Scudetto again.
Yeah, I mean they're doing the same, but we're ahead at this point. Yeah, and another free kick from Maradona, as you said, that was just absolutely world class, and you sort of get used to it, but you don't. But yeah.
At the San Paolo versus Avellino, 4-0. I should also mention, I'm sorry, we do go to play Coppa Italia after Pisa. We will tie 1-1 at Torino. And that's that.
Yep.
Not much to mention there. Avellino 4-0. Reinica, Francini, Diego, and Romano. An amazing goal by Romano here, too. What a goal that was.
Yeah, again, Giordano being provider, another really nice, just 1-2.
Yeah, the 1-2. Yeah, was that Giordano or was that Diego? No, that was Giordano. You're right. The 1-2 to the give and go to Romano for the goal was just
fantastic. Yeah, lovely stuff.
It was fantastic. So now at this point, Napoli are on 33 points and they are on pace to beat the Juve record of 51 points set by Juve in 76-77. So that, at this point, is the most points a team would get to win a Scudetto, 51 points. We are on pace to shatter that. But like Fiorentina, this match was domination. They ask Diego after the match, quasi finita Scudetto, meaning is it almost over? This is season almost over. And he says no, emphatically. He knows that there is another team breathing down his neck. The 20th game of the season at Pescara, 1-0 victory, 39th minute Giordano goals. And here's where we're going to set 5 records. 33 points overall is a record. 42 goals is a record. 10 home wins.
Yeah.
And then 31 goals at the San Paolo and 6 straight victories. And this is all record-setting for Napoli here.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely no indication of what's to come here, which is where people start to raise some eyebrows. But I think if anybody wanted to look at a period to really understand how good this team could be, in terms of this Maradona era, this period after the Milan defeat is a great advert, isn't it, for the club and for the way that the team played.
It is. It really is. This is the match where I note that Napoli wear red and white, which is so cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really cool kit. I agree.
After 20 matches, Napoli are 35 points. Milan behind them 5 points with 30, and Roma in the very far distance, 8 points, 27 points, 8 points ahead with 27. This is Maradona's sixth straight match with a goal as also, which I believe is another record or record tying.
Gigi Riva.
That's right. That's right. And again, like you mentioned, not a sign for things to come. Napoli are 5 points over Milan in an era where you have 2 points for her victory. That's two and a half matches to overcome. And Roma is in the very, very far distance. So they are rendered obsolete at this point. We will now be eliminated from Coppa Italia with a 3-2 loss to Torino at the San Paolo. Diego does get two goals here. We're out. That's that. We're not going to talk anymore about that. But here is where we will lose our second match of the season. Roma would beat us 2-1 at the San Paolo. It's our first home loss in 2 years, Frank.
Wow. Fortress San Paolo.
As it usually is. Milan would draw. Careca would get an 80th minute, but Roma beat us 2-1. Giannini in the 20th and Odi in the 70th. Milan and Verona would end up 0-0, so that would decrease our lead to +4, but it's still a 4-point lead. But then we would go and draw Empoli 0-0 at Empoli, and it's our first two-match span of dropped points. Yeah. Luckily, Torino and Milan would end 1-1, so we remain at 4 points over. And then we'd go back to our winning ways, Como 3-0 at the San Paolo. 9th and 48th would be Careca, and 41 minutes, De Napoli would get a goal there. Milan would beat Pescara to remain 4 points behind us. Anything to note with these goals, Frank?
No, just this little patch. Okay, we lost to Roma, we drew to Empoli. We played well in both those games. And we played really well in this game against Como. Maradona making the De Napoli goal with a really nice dribble. You know, we've got some really lovely link play with Maradona and Careca. There's no, again... Okay, we had a blip. You're going to lose the occasional game, aren't you? Still, there's no indication of anything that you think might possibly go wrong, right?
Right. But then we would draw again with Torino, 0-0 in Turin. Are we falling off the rails here, though, Frank? We're still 4 ahead because Milan and Avellino would end 0-0. So like last season where, you know, results went our way as, you know, matches we would drop points, so would our direct competition. We're still 4 ahead. You know, at this point, after this match, there's 6 matches left to play, you know. But are we falling off the rails?
Well, having said that, this was the first game where I was like, what's going on here? We were awful against Torino. Absolutely dreadful. Very lucky to get a point. Very lucky. All sorts of reasons why that could happen. You know,
yeah.
If you've been ahead for that long, it's really hard to stay ahead that long. You know, perhaps we're not quite at the point where we need to start looking at why these things might have happened. But yeah, eyebrows get raised here for me.
They do, but we would go on to San Paolo and beat Inter with a 21st-minute Maradona goal, that's a big result, 1-0.
We have loads of chances as well. So that's
we have a lot of chances here. So here we are looking like the Napoli that we are, you know. After 25, Napoli 41, Milan 37, we maintain that 4-point edge over them with their victory over Empoli, Milan. 1-0. So Roma 33, so they're out, basically. But, you know, still 4 points ahead, five matches to go. Nothing can go wrong, can it?
Nothing at all.
Mm. Well, we would go to Torino to play Juventus, and we'd finally lose to the old lady, 3-1. Cabrini in the 19th, Ian Rush in the 66th, and D'Agostini at a penalty kick in the 72nd minute. Careca would get an 83rd minute, but not enough to fall to Juve, third loss of the season. Roma would lose to Milan, so there is our lead cut short, 2 points ahead of Milan here after the 26th match of the season, Napoli with 41 and Milan with 39. And this is the beginning of the end, Frank.
It's a dreadful showing as well. I mean, where, you know, and in terms of what's going to come next, I think we think slightly differently about this, but if you were to look at a particular game to go, what the hell happened? This would be an interesting one. It's away with Juventus. We beat them three times in a row and we just don't turn up at all, do we?
No. Bagni, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But Bagni in the post-match interview seems fine. He's smiling, he's chatting away. He doesn't seem particularly worried, but it's noticeably dreadful. I can't think of a performance this bad. The Milan defeat, I think we were just against an amazing team, but this is just dreadful.
Well, and I checked, you know, just now, checked the starting 11 for this match, and it is the same starting 11 we started with against Real Madrid. So it's not like we didn't give it a go here. You know, we put out our best 11. Maradona will later cite changes to the midfield as part of what's to come next. We go to Verona and we draw 1-1. So Milan's win over Inter will put them at plus one. We'll put Napoli at plus one. Excuse me. Milan only trail Napoli now 1 point. It is a point lost because Maradona will open up with a 25th minute goal, and then Gallia would come in the 65th and get that draw for them.
We play quite well here, I think.
We do. We do. Yeah, no, we do. And, you know, obviously there's still a fight going on here, and we realize now that, okay, you know, all that hard work in the season, it's time to sort of get back on track, because this has not been a great sequence of games here. We have to get back to it, but and I'm not sure why, instead of starting Ferrario, Bianchi would start Biliardi in the defense, and you know, so it could
is the
and actually Carnevale would start this match over Giordano.
Yeah, so there are two people that sign the letter. Do we know when this gets written? So there's four players that sign this letter against Bianchi, you know, as Guerrella, Bagni, Giordano, and Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
Has that happened yet, or is it brewing?
I think it's brewing. I'm not certain when the letter was written. But
there's dressing room issues between.
There's dressing room issues between the team and Bianchi, and particularly those four players. And
that might
so explain. Now, yeah, so now we're faced with the showdown of showdowns. Stacked Stadio San Paolo, 28th match of the season. After this, there's only two. A Napoli win here would be immense for our second straight Scudetto, our bis, if you will. But it's a bis sbagliato, Frank, because we won't win this match. We will lose 3-2 to Super Milan.
What a 6 point.
Not without a fight, though. Yeah, not without a fight.
Sorry, a 4 points. Sorry.
Yes, what 4 points to lose, right? Verdis would open the scoring, but the Maradona free kick that stands out in my mind, aside from that free kick in the box in 85 against Juve. Yeah. And I'm talking about before we did all this research and these podcasts, was this free kick to where the journalist behind the net would go nuts and spill out onto the field. And it's a moment that I remember watching live that I'll never forget as a youngster. This is one of the standout moments. And it's an amazing free kick to take in a position that we're in, down to Milan, about to lose the lead. But you know what? Not yet, my friends. Not yet. We're still in this. Wonderful, wonderful free kick. Yeah. Maradona-esque. But then Verdes would score again in the 67th. And then Van Basten. Oh, yeah. From Ruud Gullit. That's right. And then Van Basten in the 75th. Careca would get a 77th right 2 minutes after Van Basten. So we're still in it. We just need a point. A point would be immense here too. Very, very, very good result if we were to get a point at home against Milan in this position. But this will be Diego Maradona's last goal of the season and Careca's as well. There's so much to chat about this. Milan now take the lead for the Scudetto, plus one, Frank. From this match came about, I think this was where the letter was written. Speculation that the Camorra had an influence in those Napoli players to throw the match, so that the mafia group of the Camorra, specifically the Gennaros, I believe their name was, wouldn't have to pay out billions of dollars, you know, lira, whatever the case may be, to those who bet on Napoli to repeat the Scudetto at an overestimated 5-1 odds, mind you. So the rumor was that Garella, Bagni, Ferrario, and Giordano were bribed to throw the Scudetto, not just this match, but the Scudetto. Later, Ferrario would be cleared of all accusations, but Garella, Bagni, and Giordano, not Bagni, was it Bagni? Huh, it was Garella, Ferrario, Giordano, and
yeah, they were the people who wrote the
match. It was Bagni, okay, yeah. There was some evidence that would come out later to support this, but it was never fully sought out. And
so I can give a bit more detail, because I one of my favorite books on football is called Calcio by John Foote.
I had that book and I never read it.
Yeah, it's really good, and he writes basically Pietro Pugliese, who was Diego's former driver, he provided the evidence and to the state and said that the 88 championship was thrown because of Camorra and the illegal betting rings in Naples. So that's where, that's as close, I think, as there's ever been to hard evidence. But it's quite problematic if you're relying on one person. We can only talk about what we see, right, Rafa? It doesn't look like a throwing match to me, this game. What do you think?
It doesn't look like a thrown match. I mean, you can't really...
It's close. It's really close.
It's very, very close. But I don't know. The suspicious Neapolitan in me will think otherwise, of course. But who knows? You know, you do mention that Milan. You mentioned to me that Milan's performance this season too. You know, unbeaten after Christmas. That's got to say something. You know.
Yeah. They only ever lost one game, which was the second game of the season. There's just something from Maradona's book. He says he blames it on that midfield trio. He doesn't blame it, but he explains it, because he says Romano had a torn muscle, Bagni was not in shape, and Di Napoli, who usually did all the running, was knackered. Up front, we weren't giving the midfielders the support they needed, and the manager refused to play four midfielders. And the other thing is that Maradona, for the first time, is really carrying an injury. He's got issues with his thighs because he's been playing so much. You mentioned that we're playing the same starting lineup that played at the beginning of the season. This is not an era of squad rotation. This is a coming off a really long season, the season before. This is a tired team, and this is a team with players carrying injuries. Of course, all the conspiracy theories could be correct. We know about the huge issues that there are with the Camorra and all sorts of things, but I think there's an equally plausible sporting reason for this, which is to do with Milan's focus on the Scudetto, the injuries to our midfield, and just the general fatigue levels. And momentum is such a killer, isn't it? When the wheels come off, they can really come off. I don't know, Rafa, maybe we'll never know.
We'll never know, Frank. However, the feeling in Naples was that, and it was amongst the team, and it was amongst Diego, and, you know, who knows? I mean, it's not very far-fetched to think that there was some sort of – I mean, look at the season that we were having, you know?
Yeah, but maybe we just, you know, used it all
ran out. Yeah. Now, I mean, we were a team, like I mentioned earlier, on pace to crush that 51 points.
Yeah.
You know, and we would end up right where we were last year with 42 because we won't win another match this season. Fiorentina-Napoli 3-2.
Another close match.
Another close match. And you know what? We did give a fight here. I feel we did give a fight. Even though the goal was late by Renica and it was sort of, you know, didn't really matter because Milan gets the result against Juve at the San Siro, 0-0. But had we drawn or won this match, we're back in it.
Yeah, we don't have Maradona here, do we?
We don't have Maradona. And that's a question that I have for you because I don't know why he didn't play in this match. I don't know what happened.
Injured. He'd run out of steam. So according to Maradona, he's basically carrying his abductors have been an issue all season since October, and he goes to visit a doctor in Marano in October, and he just couldn't do it. But then he describes this as his best season he's ever had, and it is. I mean, he's incredible, and then maybe he just completely runs out of steam. I don't know.
Yeah, Frank, but I mean, what a time to go visit this doctor and sit out a match.
He went back in October. He went to see, so it's been an ongoing thing.
Obviously. Oh, got you. But still, do you know Maradona? There, you can't discredit what he's done for this team. I mean, obviously, but it's still a really important match to play in. You're in the penultimate match of the season. And you're only 1 point behind Milan for the Scudetto. So Milan end up drawing 0-0, like I mentioned. But if we win this match, we're level with Milan with one match left to go at the San Paolo.
But he says, okay, so he says he was injured and there was nowhere left around my lower back or my knee for a needle to go in. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even go on the pitch for the last two games. So essentially he's been patched together for the whole season. And it's just reached a point where it's just collapsed. Yeah, I don't know. I think both of us have plausible explanations there. But I don't know. Well, we'll never know.
We won't. Napoli would lose their last match of the season to Sampdoria at the San Paolo. And it is here where the crowd is just behind Ottavio Bianchi.
Yeah.
The ring for Ottavio is just so loud, which would eventually spell the end of Garella, Bagni, Ferrario, and Giordano.
Incredible, on this club. It? All four of those guys were so important for us. Ferrario has been with us for like 12 years now, and they're all gone. It's incredible for a club to back Bianchi over Maradona.
You're right, because Maradona would go on and say he wasn't necessarily against Bianchi, although they never really saw eye to eye. They didn't get along that well. But he wasn't necessarily against Bianchi staying, but he would rather take the side of his teammates. So he sided with the teammates. And, you know, there were some threats. I'm not coming back if Bianchi comes back next season. But he had just re-signed for 5 years and all that money. So Napoli were willing to hold him to that contract and let him sit out the rest of the contract and play nowhere. So nobody would have gotten anywhere should one have, you know, bent over for it. You know, Ferlaino or Maradona. Bianchi was clearly staying. Ferlaino was behind him. These four players would be gone. And it's a sad end to such an amazing four players, but also Bruce Scolotti would end up leaving the team as well. He doesn't come up a lot this season, but he is in this team and he does play. But Diego would call Bruce Scolotti the real captain of Napoli, even after Maradona took the armband from him.
Yeah.
And Bruscolotti not named one of these players against Bianchi, but would leave anyway because of he was old, but he was also among one of those who had some sort of belief that there was something underhanded with the players here. And it would end up causing some sort of a row with him and them and the players. And my father actually ran into Bruscolotti in Naples because he had opened up a restaurant. And this might have been in the last 10 years. And he told me that the guy was, you know, he knows who he is, but he wasn't really welcoming to any of the Napoli fans. I think this might have scarred him a bit, but...
He said some weird stuff around Hamsik getting his appearance records. Yeah, I think he really left with a bitter taste in his mouth. And also, in this period, I don't think we really see him at his best. I think his great era for the club was really in the 70s as a player. There we go, man. I mean...
So that's it.
How are we going to turn this around?
Well, we're gonna turn this around quite nicely. In 89. Let me just round up 87, 88 really quick. Milan 45, Napoli 42. The same point total of last season. Just not good enough this season. Roma 38, Sampdoria 37, Inter 32, Juve 31, Torino 31, Fiorentina 28, Cesena 26, Verona, Como 25, Ascoli, Pisa 24, Pescara 24, Avellino 23, Empoli 20. Avellino and Empoli are relegated to Serie B, but next season will begin a new era in Serie A where four clubs would be promoted from Serie B to Serie A and two only this season in Serie B to make a new 18-team Serie A instead of 16. So we will have 34 matches instead of 30, something brand new. Maradona.
Also a new era for us as well, isn't it?
A new era for us too. Yeah, absolutely. Maradona 15 goals, Careca 13 goals. Those are your two top goal scorers in the league. Maradona capocannoniere this season. Virdis with 11, Giannini with 11, and Gullit would end up getting 9. Vialli, I think Sampdoria win the Coppa Italia this season. I'm not sure. But anyway, yes, a new era for us. And we are pretty much done. A Scudetto lost, Frank. That's my question to you. Is it Napoli who lost the Scudetto or Milan who won the Scudetto?
Well, sorry to be very boring, but often the truth is somewhere in the middle, isn't it? I think. And how many goals did Magica get in the end? It was 15, 12, and Giordano got 8.
15, 13, and 8.
Okay, so that's significant. And that's the only season that they played together, right?
36 of 55 goals.
Wow.
That's just amazing. 55 goals too. That's another impressive number.
It's the most
goals that any team has scored since Maradona has come to Napoli. So,
And it's worth acknowledging how good we were, but we didn't get the beginning.
Six losses, Frank, of them came after January. Yes.
Well, let's see if anyone knows. Let us know your thoughts, everyone, once you've heard it. What do you think happened? From our listeners, tell us what you think.
How do you feel about it? Yeah, is it a Scudetto loss for Napoli? I certainly think it is because the meltdown is real. If we had not melted down the way we did, the loss against Milan wouldn't be that important. On the flip side there, Milan did do what they had to do as well. Can't deny it. I wondered why Milan didn't celebrate the way Napoli celebrated, especially, they'd been there. They won they won countless Scudetto before. They won, you know, European Cups before. It's not like they haven't. But this was a nine-year stretch of a really awful time for Milan, the worst of their existence. And in two seasons after being bought out by Berlusconi, they're back in not only on top of Serie A, but they'll end up winning so many other titles in this era, in this decade. And this is the beginning of it. So, I mean, I would have imagined a celebration a la Napoli. However, Napoli's was just a bit more special, wasn't it, there, though?
Well, they make them a bit different down south, I think. So maybe you have a bit more fun. I don't know.
I don't know either. So, yeah, like Frank mentioned, let us know on Twitter, guys. Let us know how you like what we're doing. We are having so much fun. It's not over. We have more to go.
More glory.
More glory is coming. Don't let this season fool you. Milan might be the new champions of Italy, but we've got some special things coming up. Frank Sidekick on Twitter, Rafa Napoli on Twitter, Far From Vesuvius on Twitter. Please reach us, and we'll see you again soon. Frank, thank you very much. Take care. Ciao. Forza Napoli. So pazzo e voglio essere chi voglio uscire fuori da casa mia. Io so pazzo c'ho il popolo che mi aspetta e scusate vado di fretta, non mi date sempre ragione, io lo so che sono un errore.